As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Greetings and welcome back to One True Pod, the Athletic's Big 12 football podcast. I'm Jason Kersey. He's Max Olson. We're back for a second time this week, Max. It's a big week.
It's a 2-for-1 week. That's right.
It is. It is. We recapped the Big 12 championship game earlier this week. This time we're going to do a bowl preview episode. Before we get started, Max, I want to wish you a very happy Festivus, the greatest holiday in the world. Seinfeld fans will know what that's all about. So I don't know if you have any grievances you need to air about me or about anything else. You know, feel free.
To quote the late, great Frank Costanza, until you pin me, Jason, Festivus is not over.
It's my favorite episode of Seinfeld, and I'm a Seinfeld freak, but that one is number one. You know, yeah, I don't know if I ever showed you this. People can't see it, but I have this little figurine, Frank Costanza with a Festivus
Frank holding
in my office.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a Festivus freak. Even last year at the Peach Bowl, me and the rest of the OU beat writers actually went to Home Depot and got an aluminum pole and celebrated Festivus.
Did you celebrate that?
Well, we aired grievances in mostly a good-natured way, mostly. And then we did some arm wrestling as feats of strength. And
that's really
all this taking place with alcohol flowing in the hospitality room. You know how those things are.
Sure, sure.
So yeah,
that's tremendous. That'd be a good group of people to do it with too, I'm sure.
No doubt about it. But Max, we got some bowls to talk about here. The Big 12 has six teams in bowls, and we'll try to go through all of them. I don't know. What do you say? Let's start with the Cheez-It Bowl, Max. Oklahoma State against Miami. The Cowboys will have Tylan Wallace, which really surprised me. I don't know if that surprised you.
Yep.
That he has decided, even though he missed the last regular season game with an injury, he has decided to play. That's huge for Oklahoma State.
Hey, that's Tylan Wallace. I'm not surprised. The kid's a baller. He just wants to play. I mean, that's kind of how he's always been. I thought it was a bummer that he got left out for Biletnikoff finalist. I know that the stats weren't, no one's taking that away from Devontae Smith this year, obviously, but, I thought him coming back from injury this year, I think was one of the underrated storylines of college football. Just, he was awesome. And, so happy for him that he's doing that. And, Oklahoma State Miami is, it's a pretty interesting 18 versus 21 here. It's hard to know kind of what we're going to get from both sides. And I think that probably is a problem with bowl season in general here as we dive into this, Jason, is just who's playing, who's not playing, how much do these teams care? The fact that, usually bowl season, like teams usually want to get to this because they want, coaches want the 15 practices to, improve your program, to like an extra spring ball, to make up for what they lost this year, right? And so the fact that, the first Big 12 bowl game is Tuesday, December 29th. I mean, the team's not changing that much between, now and then before you go play these games. So I don't, as we get into picks later on, like, I don't know that I have a great sense for what we're going to see from these teams.
Heck no. No. I mean, I don't have a great sense on a weekly basis what I'm going to see from Oklahoma State specifically.
Yeah.
So I don't know. So and it's even more so in the bowl. So, no, I it's very difficult to pick these things. I mean, Chuba Hubbard's not playing for Oklahoma
Tevin
State,
Jenkins
obviously.
Tevin Jenkins is not playing.
Tevin Jenkins is not playing. Jelani Woods has entered the transfer portal.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot of guys that are not going to be there. And Miami, a couple of big Miami defenders have declared for the NFL draft as well. So there's going to be a lot of guys missing in this game.
For sure. Should we bring on our producer, Mike, to recap Miami for us?
I don't know if he wants to, but we can. We can ask him.
Do I have to?
Mike, you got some – I know you care about the Canes, Mike. You got some thoughts on this Cheez-It Bowl?
I mean, I can only speak on behalf of Miami's side because, you know, I've watched every game. I can't really speak on Oklahoma State, but in terms of Miami,
okay.
Secondary is very weak. The linebacking core is the weakest part of Miami's defense. Defensive line was the only thing really keeping their defense somewhat.
Got some studs up front.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen Phillips, Quincy Roche, two of the best defensive ends in the country, most likely going to both be first-round picks. Both have declared for the draft, will not play in the bowl game. So the defense is very weak at this moment.
Susceptible at this point.
And I was actually talking to Jason before starting this pod, and I said the only way Miami stays in this game is if De'Ara King puts the team on his shoulders and scores 40 to 50 points. And that's a tough ask. So I don't know whether or not Miami can actually do that, but I would be very surprised. I'll say this. I'd be very surprised if Oklahoma State didn't put up at least 30 points against this Miami team.
Okay. Okay. That is great intel, Mike. We appreciate that. It's a great point on King. And obviously, Jason, you saw him last year when he was at Houston playing against Oklahoma. I'm sure that these games against Big 12 teams, you know, do matter to him as a kid from the state of Texas, from Manville. Like, you know, I guess that's probably the way you sell Miami's chances here, right? Is if De'Ara King just goes off.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think there's also a chance that Oklahoma State comes out and turns the ball over. I mean, we've seen Spencer Sanders be very turnover prone. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma State has 16 turnovers this season as a team, which I think is 97th, tied for 97th in the FBS. So they're a team that tends to turn the ball over. And so if they do that a few times, I mean, who knows what might happen. I do think that Oklahoma State should be the favorite. I'm a little surprised by the 2-point line, though. I figured it would be a little bit wider than that.
Well, I think the other thing that is, since these are so soon after the season ended, I think an interesting factor for some of these games is, you know, sort of the sour taste some of these teams have coming out of the regular season. I think Oklahoma State losing that game to TCU, you know, I'm sure that there's some motivation here to go out and play a lot better game. That was a game they gave away after forcing as many turnovers as they did, as well as they played. You know, obviously a lot of mistakes in that one. And so I'm curious, you know, I think this team probably rallies from that standpoint and wants to finish this on a better note. And, you know, once the memory 2020 is as hard as this season was to be, that this was still a really damn good team, you know?
It is a good team. It's a very talented team. I there's no doubt that people in Stillwater are very disappointed.
Sure.
Particularly, I think, by the Bedlam loss. Not just that they lost, but they got embarrassed in that game again. I know that probably put a sour note on the season. You don't have Chuba Hubbard. But this is still a very talented team, a very talented defense. And, you know, I think they've got a – I mean, we'll get into our picks a little bit more later. But, I mean, I think Oklahoma State's going to win this game. I would be very surprised if they
do. Yeah, I think so, too. We should note for the listener, you know, this is not the Cheez-It Bowl This is a Cheez-It Bowl out in Florida. We got a little stolen valor here, basically. This is not a game that we're going to get to watch at 11 p.m. On a you know, weeknight here and see some crazy shit happen like we did with TCU Cal back in the day.
No, and I'm actually quite triggered by that's a Festivus grievance right there.
Yeah,
that
you can't just switch things up like that, you know.
Especially this bowl. I'm sorry to all the people who work on that bowl if you're listening, but I covered that bowl once when it was called the Russell Athletic Bowl. I called it the Walmart Sweatpants Bowl.
Yeah,
because that's about
rightfully so
the value that you got from it. It was a terrible experience, terrible bowl game to cover. The OU beat, it's legendary on the OU beat. We talk about it all the time. So it's not, I don't think it's fair that the Walmart Sweatpants Bowl gets to call itself the Cheez-It Bowl, you know, given the history of the Cheez-It Bowl. But that's my, there's my Festivus grievance for the day.
There you go. I like that. Yeah, it's important to note that. I want people to, you know, I don't want any false advertising here about what kind of Cheez-It Bowl we're getting. Although, look, with the way these teams are set up, I think Oklahoma State's still going to play really good defense in this game, but maybe we could have a pretty wacky, you know, scoring fest. So I wouldn't mind seeing that. Let's move on to the next Alamo. The Horns are back in the Alamo. Last year they had the decisive win over Utah, which, you know, helped the 2020 train get rolling for Texas. Now they are back where they were in San Antonio as a 10-point favorite against Colorado. Colorado is a weird team. I don't know how many Big 12 fans actually watched their former Big 12 school play this year. Colorado, I thought they'd be screwed this year, to be honest. Like they were the last to hire a coach in this whole cycle. Hired Carl Durrell from the NFL, a hire that people I think generally kind of shrugged about. And what did he do? You know, this is a coach who gets to Colorado. And within weeks, they shut the whole thing down because of the pandemic. This guy doesn't even like know his players by the time they're going off for you know, no spring ball. And what does Colorado do? They go 4-1 in his first year. And if not for that one loss, you know, they would have been tied with USC and had a case to be in the Pac-12 title game. So you're just 5 games. It's really weird, but if anybody watched them this year, they saw this team can run the ball and is pretty good.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, and I have to own it myself. I was very skeptical of that hire when it was made. I mean, you know, to me, I thought about Carl Durrell, the guy who was like, at UCLA, years ago. I hadn't even thought about him in years, you know, and I was a little bit surprised by that hire. But you're right. He did. I mean, that just sucks for him, especially, you know, a new head coach going in, and the fact that they were able to win 4 games and only lose one is very impressive. The interesting thing too, is Texas, has a bunch of players who have opted out. I mean, a lot of good players. I've kind of lost track of how many good players have opted out for Texas.
It's true. They just had another one yesterday when Brandon Eagles, their leading receiver, made the decision. I would say a little bit of a surprising decision. Not surprising in terms of Brandon Eagles' mindset, but surprising in terms of his production this year, that he's going to skip this bowl and go pro. Interesting player. When I talked to Tom Herman in the summer about Texas, I asked him what the ceiling was for Brennan Eagles. He said first rounder. I don't think he played like that this year, but this is going to be a guy that I think goes to the combine and tries to impress people with the measurables, maybe more than the more than what he put on tape this year. It just wasn't very consistent. But that's another player missing for Texas. They're going to have a very young offensive line in this game, just based on who they're missing. it's an interesting spot, and certainly I think it goes without saying that the pressure on Tom Herman is not really gone.
Right.
You know, if they lay an egg in this one, I don't want to go this far, but if they lay an egg in this one and just get smoked by Colorado, like, there could still be a coaching change at Texas.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's fair though? I mean, after they've sort of come out and said, kinda, sorta, that he's coming back, and they're losing all these guys. I
wouldn't say they've thrown all their support.
Not all of it, but you know, there was that statement that was pretty ambiguous and all of those things.
Yes.
So,
yeah. Well, look, I think interestingly, I think what happened at Auburn is probably a good warning to Texas. Not to say that Auburn made a bad hire in Brian Harsin. It was a surprising hire. I didn't see
out of nowhere
that outcome coming at all. But the number of coaches who reportedly turned down that job or backed out of the process or whatever probably should be like a little bit concerning to Chris Delcani of, hey, if I go through this, who can we get and how many people are going to publicly tell us no? Because it's not a great look.
Right.
You know, can you get somebody lined up before you start the search, which is what Auburn did not do. And you thought they're going to just promote Kevin Steele. So that was wacky to watch. But I feel like that almost weirdly gives Tom Herman more security the way that Auburn went down, which to me, Auburn is certainly a top 10 to top 15 job.
Yeah. I mean, if you can't get, who would they have to be able to get? Matt Campbell? Would they have to be able to get Matt Campbell? Somebody on that level? I mean,
I don't know. And part of that is just like how high do you have to, aim to impress everybody too. And that's not how things should be done. It's not what Auburn did ultimately. But, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen in Texas. There's a lot of people who are going to want their guy or want input on it and stuff. So I'm not saying it's going to happen. I think Texas certainly could just roll against Colorado and this is all moot, right? But it is important. Yeah. It's an important game. It's not, Texas is 6-3. I don't know that this game totally changes the, this is an unranked Colorado team. It's not this, it's not like the Utah game where you can sort of hold it up and say, hey, look, here's how good we really were. It's just a game they have to try to survive.
If they lose, it will be the 10th or so straight season of losing four games in a season. I mean
right.
They've lost four games every year since 2011. So maybe that streak ends. Maybe that's something to be positive about if they're able to win. I don't know, but I will also say that I think Texas is going to win because of Sam Ellinger. I just don't believe Sam Ellinger is going to let them lose his last game. I just don't.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that sounds sort of simple, but that's how I look at this game. I feel like he wouldn't be able to live with it for the rest of his life if he lost his last game, So.
Agreed. Yeah, that's a good point. That may be like all the analysis that's necessary in terms of this game. Not to say like Colorado's good, and I think Jarek Broussard had a really good season. Their running back who has run for 800 yards in five games. I mean, he's had an awesome year. I think you're probably right though. I mean, I think it's Sam Ellinger putting the team on his back as he tends to do. And as you saw against K-State, I mean, I think we could pretty much take a guess here at how Texas is going to play this. It's going to be about, Robinson and Johnson and just feeding them the ball. And, the way Texas ran the ball against K-State, I think is a pretty easy thing to build on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Max, all right, let's move to the next game, which is featuring the Big 12 champion, Oklahoma, in the Cotton Bowl against number 6 Oklahoma against number 7 Florida. Probably the sexiest matchup outside of the playoff, maybe of all the bowls.
I think so.
Really interesting game for a ton of reasons. And for me, I think this worked out perfectly for Oklahoma. This is what I wrote earlier this week on The Athletic. I think it worked out perfectly. This Oklahoma team didn't belong in the playoff. Let's be honest. They would not have been able to compete with Alabama this year. But if they can go down there and play well and compete with Florida, another higher tier SEC team, I think that gives them a lot of momentum going into next year. So I think this worked out great.
Yeah, it does. It reminds me a little bit of, when Texas played Georgia in that Sugar Bowl, you remember there was the whole, Georgia didn't want to be here. They wanted to be in the playoff. They just missed out. The motivation's not there. I would hope that's not the case for Florida. They just played their asses off against Alabama and had a chance to beat the number one team in the country and did a lot of things right. And really, I thought Trask and Pitts and Tony were fantastic in that game. They were so, so close. And so, I would hope they show up for this one. I would hope it's not a matter of, I know Kyle Pitts has opted to move on to the NFL. Hopefully we can all get him on our fantasy teams next year, because that guy's a monster and is going to be really, really special.
I should get dibs, but because of in our league how bad my team is. I should get dibs on Kyle Pitts. I just want to say
Jason is last in the fantasy league in the Athletic. I've been bumped out of the playoffs as the 3 seed, which was it was pretty upsetting. We had a rough finish there. I lost Will Fuller and Joe Mixon and Antonio Gibson. Needed those guys. That would have helped. Let's not get into that though. You're gonna get me now. That's we're gonna get some grievances going there if we want to talk about that.
At least you made the playoffs, man.
I know. At least I made the playoffs. Pitts is phenomenal. He was again against Alabama. Again, this is an interesting sort of turnaround here, where Florida goes right from playing for an SEC championship to getting ready for Oklahoma. Is their heart in it? But I think it's a pretty awesome opportunity for Oklahoma. I agree with you to, really get a pretty defining win for Spencer Rattler, for this football team, to start building towards another playoff run.
It reminds me a little bit of from the OU side of 2016, when OU loses 2 games early in the season, falls out of the rankings. People think they're dead.
Oh, it's
They come back and win the Big 12, miss out on the playoff. Now they get to play an SEC team in a big bowl. And they beat Auburn convincingly, and that propelled them into the next season.
Where they should have won it all.
That's right.
Yeah, I would say that. No, you're right. That Auburn game is a pretty good comp here. Do you think that, based on the Oklahoma you saw on Saturday, I don't know, how are you feeling about, like, I know that was a really good opponent, and so part of that plays into how close it was, but, like, you know, the way Oklahoma plays a close four-quarter game against Iowa State, Florida goes toe-to-toe with Bama. Like, is there any kind of concern that, hey, is Oklahoma kind of ready for
this? Well, we're about to find out, I think, how good this defense is. Like, really, how good is this defense? They've ranked all year, or at least the last several weeks, as one of the top defenses in the country. But this is a challenge unlike anything they've seen this year.
Florida was burning some very good on Alabama, the other night. And that's, they're going to attack you with – you saw it against Georgia when they just – murdered Georgia on wheel routes by running backs and stuff like that. I think the scheme part of this and just the way that Florida gets their guys out in space, I think is going to be a real challenge for Alex Grinch.
Well, and, we haven't even mentioned it yet, but one of Oklahoma's best defensive backs, Trey Brown, cornerback, the hero of the last 3 Big 12 championship games, has opted out of the bowl game and will enter the NFL draft. So that's going to be a big, interesting opportunity for
that's kind of he did the Costanza. That's it for me, after the way he finished that game.
Yeah, exactly. Alex Grinch referred to it yesterday as a walk-off home run.
100%.
So now this is going to be really interesting because you've got Woody Washington there, redshirt freshman who's played a lot this year, but then you've got DJ Graham, a true freshman who's been playing a ton. I think they're really excited about him, but this is a major moment for him, against this offense. And then the other side of that is if Florida starts scoring a bunch of points, can Spencer Rattler and this OU offense keep up? I can't believe we're saying that about an OU offense, but
sure.
Can they keep up, or would this thing turn ugly quickly?
Yeah, this is fun. This is not, when we talk about an 18 playoff, this is like an 18 playoff kind of game, isn't it? In terms of like the kind of these teams are not in the Final Four, but they're pretty close.
Yeah.
They're pretty close. And I like this matchup. I think it's a good point, for Graham and Washington, some of those guys. I know all season we like to say, hey, let's see them, roll them out and see what they can do, right? Yeah. This is a hard team to do that against because of the way that Tony and Grimes and their playmakers, even without Pitts, can do big things. And certainly Trask has, he's fallen out of the Heisman conversation, it feels like, but boy, he had an awesome year.
He did. And Max, in this day and age, we don't really get the bulletin board material, I feel like we used to. But sometimes someone steps up and gives it to us. And yesterday, Florida linebacker James Houston did that. Talked a little trash, gave us some great material. So we're going to play this clip. This is Florida linebacker James Houston talking about Oklahoma.
Oklahoma is a good matchup, but they're not on our level. They're not SEC. They're not the Florida Gators. So we should put on a good show.
Woo! So how about that?
Love it. I love it. Hey, you know, like, as we're all sort of like wrestling with this idea of like, how much should we care about these bulls? I'm glad the kids do, right? I'm glad this guy is like, you know, calling a shot. That's great.
I mean, it could work out great for him. It could work out horribly for him. I guess we'll find out, but I love it. I love it. I wish there was more of it.
Putting himself out there. Yeah. Yep. I'm good with it. I'm good with
that. The only thing we're missing is if Bob Stoops was still the head coach, you know, his SEC stuff, that would have really... You know, with him saying,
"Oh yeah, Bob was always good for Lincoln's more polite. Bob's always good for some shots on that topic." Yeah. Let's move to the next one. We got the Liberty Bowl on Thursday, the 31st. We have a little bit of a change up with this one. West Virginia is not playing Tennessee, who is dealing with COVID issues, and who knows, maybe a coaching change, and then instead, they're playing Army, which is it's a different team to prepare for than Tennessee. I would say probably, I don't know if it's a better or worse team, but it's a very different challenge to do on. Again, you don't get, even the teams that have had 15 practices to get ready, either in preseason camp or at the end of the year for an option team like this, they still have a hard time.
Yeah. Well, before we get into the matchup, can we just say this is justice is what happened here.
Yes.
This is justice what happened here. Army is 9-2, and because of stupid bowl contracts and all this bullshit, they were going to be kept out of a bowl game at 9-2 in favor of all these 2-3 win SEC teams, Tennessee being one of them. And I'm not happy that Jeremy Pruitt and his players have COVID. Let me just be very clear about that. But I am happy that Army gets to play in a bowl game because of all the teams for us to screw over as a college football world. Can we not do it to Army?
Yeah, literally. it's just ridiculous. That was the thing on Sunday that made me madder than anything in terms of if we're airing grievances. That was the thing that frustrated me the most of just what are we doing? Why is South Carolina with 2 wins in a bowl game, but no one can find room for Army? It just shows just how ridiculous the system is and how it's all tied to these partnerships and stuff like that. I'm glad it worked out. I'm not, you know, you certainly don't wish that upon Tennessee, but, I'm glad it happened. And look, that was a Tennessee team that was down to their third or fourth string quarterback. You know, they took care of business against Vanderbilt, but they're checked out. They're done.
Yeah.
They don't care about a play in a bowl game. And so this is a much tougher, challenge to play an Army team that's 9-2. That's probably a little pissed off that they got disrespected in all this. And, has a legitimately really good team under Jeff Monken.
Well, Max, you know me well. You know, I tend to run a little hot sometimes, but...
Sure do.
And there's often times when things seem outrageous, but really you're just pissed off in the moment. This was a genuine outrage that Army was kept out of a bowl game.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad that that got rectified. Now, we know what Army can do to major conference teams, even really good ones. We saw it 2 years ago when they took OU to overtime in Norman and almost won. They did basically the same thing the next season to Michigan. This is a team that if you're not ready, can really screw you up. And averaging 281 rushing yards per game right now, number 4 in the country. West Virginia, though, has a really good run defense. But are they ready for this? This isn't running out of the shotgun. This is an old-fashioned triple option.
Yeah, and the thing that's so challenging when you play these games, and we saw it like really highlighted when Coastal played BYU, is you just are not going to have that many possessions, and so you have to go down and score when you do because they're probably going to control the clock, and they may even double you up in terms of time of possession if what they're doing is working, if you can't get stops. So you've got to like... You know, if you punt or throw an interception, you're like you could be in trouble. You know, in this kind of a game because they can just smother you like that. So, I think West Virginia, I think there is a lot of motivation at this one. I know that the 42-6 loss at Iowa State you know, I mean, it was incredibly frustrating. I think they know they've got it. They had a better team than that. That's a really bitter way to finish it. And then they didn't get to play Oklahoma, obviously. And so I do think that they care about this one. They know that this is important in terms of taking that next step as you get ready for year three. And I think it's going to be a big deal to them. But, you know, and I also like that they have, I mean, look, the way they've played defense this year gives you some confidence that they can find a way to get some stops. And with, you know, how well, you know, how well their dudes have shown up in games. I, you know, it's worth pointing out West Virginia is not going to have Tony Fields, who, you know, they're who certainly played at an all Big 12 level this season after transferring from Arizona at linebacker. Really, really good player. And so I don't know how much does that make you concerned that West Virginia's defense is, you know, going to have some issues in this one.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think certainly when you lose a player of that caliber, it's obviously going to be a difference. I'll tell you the thing about this game that interests me really, the line, West Virginia 7.5. I can't believe that that's the line, honestly, with the way Army plays and how tight they play teams and how good they've been this year. I was a little surprised that the line is that big, to be honest.
You were thinking you're taking Army there, right?
Hell yeah, I'm taking Army.
What? Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, right? It makes sense. You know, short notice to play a game like this.
I mean, they're so difficult to prepare for when you never see anything like that. I don't know how.
I think probably Neil Brown, probably like maybe when they played Georgia Southern in the Sun Belt at Troy, maybe he would have faced it that time, but that's a while ago, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be a nice little challenge for that team. Let's go on to the Texas Bowl. I'm excited to get to our picks here in a little bit, but we got two more games left. Texas Bowl, also on December 31st, that next Thursday. Arkansas-TCU. Now, Jason, you know a thing or two about this Arkansas team?
Yep.
This is probably a sneaky good matchup. Now, you know, it depends on just, you know, we've kind of seen the good and the bad with these teams, right? So it depends who shows up, but... I like this one.
I love this game. I mean, this is an old Southwest Conference game, first of all, which those are always cool when you see former conference foes meeting back up. That may not mean much to people today, but I like that historical kind of stuff. You know, they played a few years ago in Fort Worth. There was a really great overtime game between Arkansas and TCU in Bielema's second to last season. The next year, TCU came to Fayetteville and beat them pretty convincingly. But this Arkansas team has been so much fun to watch this year. They're the most fun 3-7 team because of how bad they were last year and the year before. I don't know that people who don't follow it closely like I did, just because I lived there and covered them for a while. That program was dead. I mean, they were as dead as any program in college football. I think Kansas might have given them a really good game last year. Or even beaten them last year. I mean, Arkansas.
Well, look, they did play terribly against a bunch of G5. So yeah.
In Chad Morris's two seasons, they lost to North Texas, San Jose State, Western Kentucky, and somebody else they weren't supposed to lose to. I mean, it was a bunch of really Colorado State, a bunch of losses they shouldn't have had. And so the fact that Sam Pittman has them playing so well, playing so hard, they won three games in the SEC this year after not winning any in the previous 2 years. Took LSU right down to the wire. Should have beaten Auburn. They got completely screwed in the game against Auburn.
They sure did.
So this is a team that's pretty solid. And then you look on the other side, TCU, they've shown these flashes of being a really good, competent team. And then they've looked pretty bad at other times. And so I think this is a great matchup.
You know, people will see the record and see 3-7. And I don't really think that reflects the improvement you saw from Arkansas. And obviously in a year like this, if you were playing non-conference games, they'd probably be closer to a 5 or 6 win team, I'm sure. Man, they're good, and the way that Grant Morgan and Bumper Poole and Jalen Catalan and the guys that they found on defense played this year, you know, really impressive. And then you know, at times, you know, that offense under Kendall Briles has definitely shown some flashes of being pretty good with the way that Felipe Franks and Traylon Burks and some of the guys they found there have played. So, it's a dangerous team. I would say you got to look past the record and say that this is a team that if they're in the Big 12, I think would probably be, you know, not far off from where TCU or Texas Tech or West Virginia or some of these teams ended up. So it's a good matchup, and look, we don't, we, you know, we don't know what we get from TCU. They've lost Sonny Cumbie, who's now at Texas Tech, which I thought was a really, really interesting move. I think it kind of made a lot of sense on both sides. And I think that I'm interested to see. I think they're probably just what they found in those last few games, I think, is just run the damn ball. You know, I think they kind of figure out, let's build around that and then take the shots with Duggan and Johnston and some of the guys they have who can make plays downfield. But, you know, this is I would not treat these Hogs lightly. I think it's a good matchup for TCU.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, really, when you think about it, it's, I think it's one of the better, perhaps, bowl games within the Big 12, and there's a lot of good ones, but just in terms of a pure matchup, I think this one's really exciting. I think it could be a fun game there on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, I think so. It almost feels like this should be a Cheez-It Bowl, you know?
Yeah.
An authentic Cheez-It Bowl.
If this was the real Cheez-It Bowl, we might, you know, it might be crazy. Maybe it will be anyway.
Maybe it'll be like a 13-10 kind of game. I think that one's worth watching. This ultimately, you know, and I think this kind of tends to happen most years, but the Big 12 ended up with a pretty good bowl slate, I would say, of good opponents. You know?
Absolutely. And
I think that brings us to our last one here, which is the Fiesta Bowl. The Iowa State Cyclones are playing in a Fiesta Bowl. Do you ever think you'd see the day, Jason?
No, not really. You know, we talked about it with Randy Peterson a couple weeks ago, but I mean, this is a team that has been on the precipice of taking that next step so many times in my lifetime that I can remember. Paul Rhodes, I remember the Seneca Wallace year. It looked like, oh my God, they're about to take off, and then that didn't happen really. But It's very cool. Those are such great fans. And again, I'll say the same thing I said last week. It sucks that Iowa State fans don't get to, or a bigger number of them don't get to experience the Fiesta Bowl. It sucks that this had to be the year, because they were, even the limited number of Iowa State fans were rocking Jerry World last week.
Yeah.
They really were great. And you imagine how much different that might have been. So I feel bad for them, but I'm very happy for Iowa State that they got that bowl bid. I know there's some controversy about them getting that spot over maybe some other teams, but I'm thrilled for them.
Yeah, I to me it was a pleasant surprise. I sort of assumed Iowa State would end up, you know, back in the Alamo or back in the you know, going out to Florida for the Cheez-It Bowl. So you know, to draw that New Year's Six bid, I think is it speaks to, you know, what we saw all year, which is that the committee really respected this Iowa State team. So much so that you know, they kind of didn't really care about the Louisiana game that much and gave them a pass for it. And you know, then you split with Oklahoma. And came up short against Oklahoma State. But I think this is, you know, this Iowa State a year, you know, these last couple years, they've gone to bigger bowl games and have not really put together the kind of performance that Matt Campbell wants to see. It's not been kind of the complete performance that is representative of what they can be or what they were during the season. Certainly, I think they were just outmatched against Notre Dame last year. And there's certainly no shame in that now that we know, hey, look, that Notre Dame team was on its way to becoming a playoff team, right? But the year before, you lose to Gardner Minshew and Washington State in the Alamo. This is a big chance for Iowa State to finish the season on the right note, you know, and for Brock Purdy and these guys to correct some of the mistakes made against Oklahoma and to do so against a Oregon team that I think we're pretty sure they're good. They were,
it's just, you know, hard to know.
Well, it's, you know, so they were 3-2 and got a spot in the Pac-12 title game.
Yeah,
which is a normal thing that happens in any given year, you know.
Yeah.
And so you know, and then they took care of, they it's a very talented team that took care of business against USC in that game. They're a team that's had just a ton of opt-outs to start the season from NFL caliber guys, obviously Penei Sewell, but a lot of guys on their defense too. And still, you know, they've still got enough. Kayvon Thibodeau, an All-American pass rusher.
He is so good, by the way.
So good.
Holy cow, that guy's good.
He's we'll only be seeing him in a uniform in at the college level for another year, because that's a three and out guy without a question. And I think I've enjoyed I've enjoyed what Joe Moorhead has done at Oregon in the limited number of games this season as their OC. I like the direction he's taken them in. And look, now that the crystal ball speculation is kind of over, I could see this team being pretty locked in.
Yeah. Do you think there's any value in for Iowa State, even though this is a weird year and Oregon's only 4-2, going to a major bowl and playing against, I know they're not Ohio State, but Oregon is a brand. They're a national brand that's won a lot of games, that's been in the playoff before, had a lot of really great players. I think even with a maybe with a roster that's been depleted a little bit, a team that hadn't played very many games, I think this is an important opportunity for Iowa State to play against a team that is nationally respected. I think about the way Kansas State used to be, where you know they would get in bowl games against you know these other conferences a lot of times, and they'd lose. And Oregon is one of those. I remember in 2012, correct, Kansas State wins the Big 12, goes to the Fiesta Bowl and got beat pretty badly. And that was a Kansas State team that had been ranked number one or number two at one point
during
that season.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, they never really did that. This would be a big step for them just to beat Oregon, I think.
Yeah, and the one thing worth mentioning that just popped up while we were taping this is, you know, Latrell Bankston, the really talented defensive tackle, the JUCO transfer who made an impact for sure for Iowa State up front. He just went in the transfer portal this morning. A little bit of a surprise there. We'll kind of find out more about what happened there and if Iowa State can, you know, find a way to bring him back. But that's a pretty important piece up there up front that's missing.
Yeah, it is. That's big news. Yeah, that just happened right here while we're sitting here recording it. But
I don't know that they can. The portal's crazy right now. So I don't know that you get him back for this game or anything like that. But that's an interesting thing to solve there. Iowa State's still got some more time. You know, this game is on January 2nd, so they do still have some time to get ready for this game. And you know, I would expect that this one really matters to them. Not to say that the other ones didn't, but in terms of cleaning things up from the mistakes against Oklahoma and, you know, really, really trying to, you know, as Matt Campbell loves to say, be the best version of themselves and play a really clean game. I think this is a great opportunity and an opponent that is definitely, you know, they lost to Cal, they lost to Oregon State. It's a beatable team.
Absolutely. It's a beatable team. And this is a good Iowa State team. This is a good Iowa State team. And I agree with you. I think they will be motivated. I mean, this is a team that has gone farther than any Iowa State team ever has before. They were right there with Oklahoma, right there. You know, they don't throw three at Oklahoma. And so I think there's plenty to be motivated about. We know Brock Purdy is good. We know Breece Hall is good. We know Charlie Kohler and Xavier Hutchinson are good. This is a good team. And I'm excited to see them play in this one. And I think they've got a real good shot to win.
Well, you want to get onto the picks then?
Let's do it. The feats of strength.
Right. Feats of strength. why don't you tell them the record here, Jason? So look,
do we have
to? You got me. You got me on the Big 12 title game. I think my pick was right, but it was wrong. Right?
It was sound. It was a good pick.
It was sound logic. Just the final score didn't bear that out there in terms of. You know, Iowa State covering, what was it? I think we ended up at 5.5 there.
Yeah, 5.5.
It was close. Real close.
It was close.
Almost a push.
But because of that, we agreed last week that would count for three because that gives me a chance to get back in it. And I am now within striking distance.
Oh, you sure are.
Max is 25-22. I'm now 21-26 again.
That's so embarrassing.
Max shouldn't have agreed to the three game thing, or else I wouldn't have a chance to catch up. But that's your bad. I'm not going to let you take it back.
I'm tanking pretty hard right now. I after getting cocky, I got cocky, and I said people should bet my picks. And then ever since then, it's been just a dumpster fire. But we're gonna rally. We're gonna rally for the holidays here.
All right, so let's do it. Let's go through these. Oklahoma State is a 2-point favorite against Miami in the Zombie Cheez-It Bowl. Your thoughts. I'll let you go first.
I will take the Pokes covering the two. I don't know. I don't know. That's how you feel about Oklahoma State, right? I think they'll show up. They did last year against A&M. I think they played a competitive game in that one when they got Sanders back. I just think maybe Miami's just missing a little bit too much. I don't feel good about where Oklahoma State's offensive line is at, certainly. And that you take Phillips and Roche out of it, I think that probably would be the thing that decided the game. When you remove them from it, I think Oklahoma State can get it done.
Yeah. Now it's a little bit of an awkward thing for me because I need to pick different than you on a bunch of these because then I have no chance to catch up if I don't. However, I want to pick Oklahoma State too, so I'm going to go ahead and do that on this one. I just think that given the opt outs on the Miami mm-hmm. side, and given that Tylan Wallace is playing, I will take Oklahoma State, but we're not going to agree much, Max, moving forward.
Well, okay, here's your chance here. Why don't you hop on the Buffs here at +10? You know,
I will.
I mean, they're unranked.
I planned on it.
And Texas loves to play down to their competition. They're playing an unranked team in a bowl game. They probably think this is going to be a breeze here. This is a great chance for you to pick Colorado.
I'm going to pick Colorado to cover, but Texas to win. Because like I said earlier, I think that Sam Ehlinger will not let them lose this game. But I will pick Colorado mm-hmm. to cover.
Okay. I'll take Texas, the -10. And just to help you out here, just to give you a chance. And I just think, this is a game where they sort of break out the young talent, as you saw against K-State and with Bijan and Roshan. I mean, those guys can definitely move the ball, I think, on Colorado. So as long as Texas, shows up and cares, I think they can cover this 10. Mm. Based on the Texas team we saw against K-State, which is not really similar to any Texas team we saw the rest of the season.
No.
But,
No.
We'll see who shows up there. All right, Cotton Bowl. Florida is a 2.5-point favorite against the Sooners. Jason, what do you think?
Well, at the risk of antagonizing my loyal subscribers and listeners, I think Florida is going to win the game. And given it's such a small spread, I guess I have to then say that Florida is going to cover at 2.5. Oklahoma's defense has been so good this year, and I do not want to take away from that. I've sung Alex Grinch's praises all year. They have not seen anything like this yet, like what Florida can do on offense, especially through the air.
They saw it in the semifinal last year, but yeah.
I mean this season, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that it's going to be like that. I don't think OU will get humiliated the way they did last year in the Peach Bowl, but I look at this matchup, and then you lose Trey Brown, experienced veteran DB on top of that. I think this is a tough matchup for OU in that way. So I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I think Florida wins and covers 2.5.
Yeah, I'm taking Florida to cover the 2.5 as well, just because I think I just think there's not very many teams in the country that can – do what they did to Georgia and do what they did against Alabama. Didn't finish the job there against Alabama, obviously, because that's a superior offense that they went against. But while I think that Florida should be ranked lower in the final CFP rankings, I thought that was kind of silly that they'd still be ahead of Cincinnati.
It was.
At the same time, I would say I just think this Florida team is just going to spread you out and hit you for a lot of big plays. And, it's a tremendous challenge for Alex Grinch and his defense, but I think Florida's going to put up enough points to cover and win.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. So, all right, Liberty Bowl. We talked about West Virginia and Army, West Virginia 7.5. I've already pretty much made my case clear here. I think Army's going to cover, and I think Army's going to win. So I do. I just think that line is too big. I think the way Army plays, they're so unique, so different. I'm taking Army.
Yeah, I think I would take Army +7.5. I think West Virginia can win this game, but it's going to be a grinder.
Yeah, yeah, it's gonna that'll be an exciting one to watch for sure. All right, let's get through these last two, Max. Arkansas, TCU. TCU is a 6-point favorite. Go ahead, I'll let you go first.
Well, I think this is probably one we can get on both sides of because I can see, I could see TCU covering the 6. I'll take TCU. Covering the 6. I actually think these teams are pretty evenly matched, but I think TCU, the way that they finished the regular season, I believe they won 4 of their last 5, started to figure some things out. I'm I'm cautiously optimistic that TCU is going to show up for this game and play pretty well. Now, you know, again, we'll see who's missing for these kind of games, but I think TCU covers. You want to take Arkansas plus six?
Give me the Hogs. Give me the Razorbacks.
Calling the Hogs.
Give me Arkansas plus six, and I'll even take it a step further. I think Arkansas is going to win. I think they'll win the game. Now, okay. But I could see it going either way. I really could. Like we said earlier, this is a really good matchup. This is a pretty even matchup. But I will take the Hogs to win Sam Pittman's first bowl game as a head coach. And last but absolutely not least, Oregon against Iowa State. Iowa State, a 4.5-point favorite in the Fiesta Bowl. Max?
I don't know, man. I really... This one feels like a trap. It's because I think it is really a 50-50 game. No matter what Oregon's record, you know, Oregon finishes 25th in the CFP rankings only because they won the Pac-12 title. I think it's a really, I really think it's a 50-50 game. I don't know, man. What are you thinking?
I'm going Cyclones. Give me the Clones, man. I think because I think they're motivated. I think coming off that close game, and I think they're good up and down their roster on offense, on defense. I just think they're a good team with a lot of really good players. And I also wonder if, you know, the fact that Oregon hasn't played very many games, if that maybe becomes a factor in this one.
Yeah. You know what, to help you out here, I'll go Oregon plus 4.5. My only reason for this, I don't think Oregon's the better team. But I do wonder if this is one of those games where you see the difference in one team having played just a whale of a season and a real long fight here for Iowa State, where they had to really get up every week and play really, really good football, versus Oregon, who I think is probably just fresher. You know, like, I think that's probably the advantage here is, you know, look, they can be more inconsistent, and we've certainly seen the bad side of them. But the fact that they can, you know, they haven't played that many games, I think probably helps them in a game like this. So I, only to give you a chance to, you know, potentially tie this up or take the lead or whatever, I'll take Oregon plus 4.5. I think the Clones will win, but I think it's going to be pretty close.
Well, that's very kind of you in the holiday spirit here on Festivus to do that for me. But no, what you just described is exactly why I don't think Ohio State should be in the playoff. So I agree that is absolutely a factor that needs to be taken into consideration. One of these teams is going to be way fresher than the other. But in this case, I just...
Oh, and the Big 12 title game was, I'm sure you would say from watching up close, it was a really physical game.
It was. You know?
That was a slugfest of a game. And so I'm not saying Iowa State's going to be gassed for this one, but I think that's an advantage for Oregon. That it's been a really long year for these guys at Iowa State who've done an incredible job since June of being back, doing everything right, not getting COVID, like, you know, not having a, you know, a bunch of spikes and shutdowns and stuff like that. They've done an incredible job. The fact that Oregon has had, ultimately, I think they've had a little bit of an easier run here. I mean, they got put in their Pac-12 title game as the number two team in their division because Washington couldn't go, right? So it's been that kind of a weird year where they've gotten some breaks here that Iowa State's, you know, had to earn everything, but maybe you pay a little bit of a price for that here at the end where it's just been a really long year and it's a good opponent. So I think it's a close game.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be a good one. Well, thank you for listening. Thanks to all of you for listening throughout the season. We've really enjoyed doing this podcast and getting together every week to talk about Big 12 football. So those of you who have listened and stuck with us through the year, we really do appreciate it and hope you all have a great holiday season.
Yeah, thanks so much to everyone who's listened and who's, you know, supported us here in this first season doing this podcast. We appreciate, you know, all the feedback, good and bad, and we appreciate you guys, you know, listening and taking a chance on it.
Absolutely. Please subscribe to our show, One True Pod, on Apple or Spotify. Leave us a review and a good rating, and find our stories on The Athletic. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, you can sign up with our latest promotional offer, theathletic.com/onetruepod. You don't just get the best college football coverage, you get all of our sports coverage. So be sure to take advantage. Thanks for listening.